This is an interview with Mr. Charles Gamble of Blaine, Kentucky. This interview was conducted by Edward McCurley on July 13, 1978 for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview was conducted at Mr. Gamble's home in Blaine. This tape begins in the middle of a Jenny Wiley story.
They tested it when he was about, I believe it was about 6 weeks old, they said, see if it'd make a brave warrior, and they strapped it to a little raft or something and floated on Cherokee Creek, and it screamed terribly, so to kill the baby wouldn't be a brave warrior. Mm-hmm. I've heard my grandfather's told me that years ago when I was little, you know.
I see. Uh-huh.
Yes, my aunt, she just passed away last January. She was lived to be over 100.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather, he lived to be 90. Let me see, I believe he's 92, I believe, when he died, passed away. But, he told me a lot of the family history, you know, and of course they brought slaves in here from Virginia, and there's slave owners. Of course, I don't know if they'll tell that or not, but the slave graveyard down here, just on the hill down, it's among the bridges down below where they're buried down here on the, I believe it's on the slaves, maybe it's on the farm down here. Okay, the fellow who owned it now. Savage, yes, Ernie Savage farm. And their bridge was just, I think, a little higher on the hill across over on the old Houghton farm, the Hester Sweatin' and Houghton farm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Remember seeing all four of them. They all lived to be in their 90s. My great-grandfather Butler lived to be 95. I believe he was the oldest, and the others in their 90s. And he married John Stafford's daughter. He was an early settler on the below Painesville level down the Big Sandy somewhere, I think. John Stafford. He married his daughter. And when my, I don't know whether he was when my great grandfather was in here, when he settled here, his nearest neighbor lived near where Painesville is now.
I see.
About 19 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
I think was named for my great-grandfather's oldest daughter, Aunt Louise Walters, down here. She was the first child born in the Blaine Valley here in 1805. My grandfather in Claiborne, Swettenham, great-grandfather, born in 1807. And they're buried, she's buried in the Walters, and my great-grandfather right over here. And her sweetheart, the Moore that laid out the city of Louisa,
mm-hmm.
She was his sweetheart. But then she married a Walters, and they mostly claimed that Louisa was named for Louisa Ward. But without a doubt, it was named for Louisa Swettenham, Nero's daughter. At least she was his sweetheart. He was mighty struck on her. What was his name? A Moore. Anyone that laid out Louisa, the county seat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know, when Larson made the county, there's only one vote of, Magus or something, Blaine here, coming one vote of getting the county seat.
Is that right?
Louisa. Yes.
How long ago was that? Do you know?
Well, that was in, Larson made the county in 1822. They had the centennial in 1922. I know they rushed over there to get the streets paved and everything. But by the time the centennial, I used to drive an old Ford car when I was born. I've been stuck in the mud hole right in front of the courthouse. Them the muddiest streets in there ever was. Always nice and Painesville, but Lord, we couldn't get to Painesville. Drive to Painesville nearly in a buggy or wagon. You know, they was paved with brick in Painesville. You know, it was really a nice town way back then. But Louisa was so muddy, you know, it was terrible. But I've been stuck in an old Ford right in front of the courthouse.
How'd they get you out?
People in there help you out, push you out.
Push you out?
Them little old Fords, you know, you can pick them up and put them around. That is three or four men good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was Louisa a large town at that time?
Well, it was nearly as large as now, yes. In 1922, you said, 50-some years ago. Yes, it was up near as large as it is now. It's up near 2,000. It's not about 2,000 now, eh? Yes, Louisa's an old town. I don't know what the population really was then, but it's just about as much, I guess, as it is now. Of course, it's built up quite a bit around Louisa now, but the whole corporation there, it's not many more, I don't guess, than worthy.
Do you remember the centennial celebration very well?
Oh, yes. Then you see they had another centennial, the sesquicentennial, the 150th year. They say that would have been not too long ago, you see.
Mm-hmm.
They say 22, then 72, wouldn't it?
Right. Yeah. What kind of, how did they celebrate?
Yes, I remember the old things seemed like better than I do the recent things. Yes, I remember that. I attended the centennial in 22.
Well, how did they celebrate that centennial, do you recall?
It was just, I don't know, they just, country people just all went in. And it used to be all just about like the 4th of July. I haven't been in, I don't know, well, I believe they had a parade this last 4th of July, but it used to be way back 50 years ago, that was a really important event, and they'd gather in there, you know, for miles around and celebrate the 4th. And it had quite a crowd. Be more people down on the 4th of July than any other day in the year, frankly, you see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, that's, it went back in horse and buggy days. It's a long trip to Louisa. Well, from out here, you know, on a wagon or something, it's an all-day trip. I left here in a wagon before daylight and be dark getting to Louisa in the wintertime. All day's journey. Then back when the old Ford cars come in, Daddy got his first car in 1917 Ford, along the fall of 16, and it was a 2 hours drive to Louisa, you see, at the best you could make it was be 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It takes 4 hours to go there and back, you see. But oh, that was something. Then you could spend several hours in there shopping around, you see, and get back in the same day. People thought that was awful. And ordinarily, it takes so long, you know, to go in a wagon or anything. Of course, naturally, you could go faster by horseback. You know, my father was a doctor, and he practiced medicine all through here. Rode horseback, but he more or less died young. He's been dead 42 years.
Mm-hmm.
But he's forded the creeks out here, and in the wintertime, you know, and the creeks would be up, you know, and he'd have to get his feet maybe wet, you know, and they'd freeze in the stirrups, and he'd get in, mother and I, or some of us have to get up and of a night, you know, go out maybe and break his feet loose before he'd get off his horse. He'd have to holler. Well, no wonder he died, he was more or less young. He exposed himself so to the weather that way back in the flu epidemic in 1917-18. He all had the flu at home, but he never did take it. He is out riding all the time, ringing and seeing all the patients too, but he didn't take it himself. That was really some winter, and this last winter was the nearest winter that I've ever seen anything come up to 1917-18.
Is that right?
But, you know, it was so cold and frozen.
I sure do. Well, did your father have an office, or did he travel around?
He had an office here, yes. This little building right down here, two-story building, the bank there, that concrete building was his office.
I see.
Uh-huh. Of course, the one before that, before he built here on the hill, we lived up about three houses, a big two-story white house up the 201 here, Ed Wilder place, and the same house as I was born in that house up there in 98. And his office was up there. Now they've made another dwelling house out of his office up there, the two-story house right by it there. Between Lester's and the Donnie Brock place. Now that was really his office back then, but Elijah moved down here. He built this block building down here by the bank. Two-story there. Had his garage underneath there. Two-car garage. All was upstairs. Just his twin brother, my uncle. Well, in fact, his double uncles. Dad and uncle, they married sisters. They were twin brothers, but they married. Them girls, you know. Mother was 2 years older than I had. And they always lived together here. And mother was 2 years older than Andy, but she just passed away last January. Her mind was so good and clear till the very last. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She fell and broke her arm last first of May last year. Saturday night, I started April. And she fell. Well, she seemed to be doing pretty good, but she had a cardiac failure in the hospital about 3 weeks after she. Her arm would seem like her healing good, but then she never did no good after that. Mm-hmm. She actually had the heart attack. She didn't do much good. She just kind of gave up then and said, well, she's so old. She didn't seem like she didn't try to get well then. She yes. more or less got so weak that she felt like she never could be able to get back home. No, before that, she would did all my cooking for me. Now I have to cook for myself. Kind of hard. But no, she did all my cooking. Well, I got breakfast and get up and get breakfast for several years after mother died. But otherwise, she did all the cooking. She's a good cook, and I really miss her cooking.
Was your father the only doctor in this area?
No. There were other doctors here. Old Dr. Roberts, he was in here before Daddy. Well, he didn't practice much, I don't think, after Daddy started praying Daddy and Uncle. And then 5 miles up Blaine here, the Dr. Rice's was up there, the old Dr. Nelson T, and then Dr. Collins CB. But he later moved to Louisa, you know, and he died in Louisa. Then there was other doctors in Blaine and out here. I believe at one time Dr. Skaggs moved in here, but he didn't stay long. The old Dr. Sparks was in here a while. And then Dr. Orsburn, H.C., but he moved to Ashland, and it seemed like the others, they didn't stay long, but Daddy and Uncle, not all that really was here any length of time. Well, I don't know, old Dr. Roberts might have been here all his life, but he died here, but the others, the other younger doctors had come in a while, you know, or something, and then they'd go other places. Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned the name Swetnam.
Yes, he was the first. Then Gamble, my great-grandfather Gamble, great-great, he settled up here at Martha. Mm-hmm. At the my great-great-granddaddy Swetnam was the first settler, I guess, in the Blaine Valley, or out in here, at least just below the Mountain Hood here. And then my great-great-granddaddy Gamble, he came from North Carolina, and he settled up here at the Forks of Blaine.
Mm-hmm.
At Martha, what's Martha now? That yes, my great granddad is sweating him. He married Mildred Cross in Virginia, and between the Rappahannock and Potomac Rivers in Virginia. And in 1803, Christmas Day, 1803, he married Mildred Cross. Her father was John and Bathsheba Greenleaf Cross. And they were very wealthy and aristocratic people, and they was kind of mad. And they didn't like Grandfather Swetnam, and so he gave them slaves and told them now to go make their living. And so they brought their niggers and come on and settle here at Blaine. And soon after they married. Now, of course, they'd been married. It was sometime in the year 1804 they come on in here now.
Mm-hmm.
And then old Aunt Louisa Walters, She's buried down here. She was born in 1805. My great grandfather, Claiborne, C.L. Claiborne Lewis, was born in 1807. His old home still stands over here. It's over 100 years old. It was one of the first frame houses built here in the country. It was built in 66. Well, that'd be about 112 years now. It's still standing over here. I want it over here. Mm-hmm. It was out of the family a while, but Daddy brought it back before he died. I still own it across the creek over the old two-story. And they said the weather board was 3/4 inch thick near those sawmill whipsaws. Well, they had sawmills, you know.
Yes.
I don't know what a whipsaw was, but I never saw one. But said they saw it in the, a lot of study, you know, instead of 2 before, a lot of them was 4 before. Saw it out of yellow poplars that cut in these bottoms here, you see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're the big yellow poplars. It's in fair shape. Yeah, of course, I've rented it, and the renters have treated it pretty rough. It's still standing over here. And my great-great-granddaddy's home is still standing down here. This Ernie Satyrs lives in it. The log houses there, it's been weatherboarded up, you know. But the old logs are his original. Well, his original house is built in the bottom, over in the Walters bottom there. And a couple of flooding got in it, and so then he moved to high ground and got up on the kind of on a knoll like this here, down about a mile below here. Yeah. And old log rooms is two log rooms there now. Is his original house. It's still standing there now. That's way over 160 or 70 years old now. One of the oldest houses here.
If you were telling me about a cemetery nearby,
uh-huh.
How about telling me about that again, since I've got the recorder on this time?
Oh, you mean where the Nerai is buried, the old Nerai, my great-great-granddaddy, the first settler is buried.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, he's buried on the, Raymond Butler's boys' farms now down here. He married Lexi Holt and Holt and Shea. That was her grandmother, with Hester Swetnam Holt. And they're buried right near the dividing fence between, I think though it's on the Holton side of the Ernie Satyrs farm. Originally the Julia Swetnam Moore farm. But home now for Ernie Satyrs.
Now, are those the graves that are not marked?
No, they're not marked.
They're not marked.
No, they're not marked.
Does anybody know that they're there besides you?
Well, the Holtons are all dead, and I don't know now. Shirley Crawford might know. She lives at Maysville now, but her sister Pearl, is about my age, she's dead. She would have known. Probably, they're there buried on her grandmother's farm. I guess she would really know more about would know exactly. I don't know whether anyone really knows just where they are.
Mm-hmm.
On the myself.
I see.
I've been there, but years ago, there's just rocks of the grave. Now, the other Swetnams, all the rest of the, more or less on down, they've got the monuments to the grave, but I don't know. It's a wonder. It looked like some of their children, maybe they had, would have put markers to their graves, but there isn't any. Never was any. To the original settlers, the ones that came in 1804.
Mrs. Greer said that you knew something about the development of the oil industry in and around Blaine.
Well, yes. One of the years ago, after they discovered oil in Pennsylvania, the some of the geologists, or early geologists, someone that traced it through here from Pennsylvania, and they came in here and drilled up here in the old Edwards farm, just about a mile above Blaine here, and they struck some oil up there, and through about a little over 350 feet deep, and I think they call it what is in the salt sand now, and it just flowed for like made 100 a barrel or so, you know, just flowing out, and it was quite an excitement. But Lord, that I don't know how many years ago, that's been 100 years ago, I guess, or more.
I see.
I don't know just the year. And my grandfather gambled then. There's a man by the that worked in the field by the name of Bracken. And my grandfather, Leander C. Gamble, and him, they got interested, and they took up all the oil field, because Granddaddy's spring up there where the Gambles, where grandfather lived, there was an oil spring up his branch, and he had had trouble in the summertime getting the oil off the water, you know, for his cattle to drink.
Oh, yeah.
And so he just, he said, well, they ought to drill farther up, you know, that's 6 miles above here. He said they just didn't come up far enough. This played out up here, this little shallow stuff. So they leased all up there, and they couldn't get the money to drill. They wasn't able, you know, even drill a shallow well then, you see. And they couldn't raise the money enough to drill. Yes, he had all the country leased up here. Well, my father was at the Old Brunswick Hotel in Louisa, and in the long back in the teens, and he met the what they call a man named Cap Album. And he started up Big Sandy River from a company in Indiana wanting to take leases. And he said, well, why don't you go out in our country? He said, we've got the best prospects of all of anywhere here down in the Sandy Valley. And he said, well, could I get leases out there? And he said, well, sure, you could get all the leases you want. So he came out here, and my grandfather took leases for him.
Mm-hmm.
And sold them. He let them have leases up there. He took leases for them, and then he took some for himself. And he took the Jesse Lyons lease, the Keaton Oil and Gas from company. And Daddy was and later when they discovered oil, it was right in the heart of the field. And Daddy was the president of the company, and they sold stock around here, and they started selling $1 a share. And they couldn't hardly sell it, and then a discount to $50 a share, $50 for 100. And and that stock paid $50 a month for, what was it, or more, till they sold it about 10 years after that. And really paid off, you see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the $50 original investment, a $60 original investment drawn $50 a month. Dividends for so many years. And but grandfather died before the Union Oil Company. He let this Cap Allen have his lease there, and he died about a year before they drilled. They discovered oil over on the Laurel side, but it was about a mile or so away. And after grandfather died, he asked Daddy where. Granddad always had the well staked where they wanted to drill up his branch near this oil spring. And the company asked Daddy where Granddaddy had his well staked. And so he showed him, and they drilled the first well on his place, and they got a gusher. It made over 100 barrels a day. And it was a little deeper than the old Edwards oil here. It was down below the big lime up there, and that's the reason it's lasted so well. I guess it was in the Weir sand, and it's around 750 feet deep up there, and it's still producing oil yet, you see.
They're still using it?
Huh?
Are they still using it and drawing the oil from that well?
Oh, yes, they're still. Well, now they've flooded the field with water up there now, and I don't know whether they're getting the oil out of this original well or not. They have plugged some of them and put the water wells in between, you know, and grouped them around, but they still... still producing oil on the farm. Yes, I get royalty checks every month.
Well, I see.
Yes, from since back in about 1920.
Wow. Is that the Ashland Oil Company?
Yes, Ashland Oil owns it.
Were there other wells besides that in this area?
Oh, yes. Oh, there's thousands of wells up there. That's a big field, you know. Some said it was one of the best fields east of the Mississippi River.
Is that right?
Way back, huh? It's produced for so long. It's that weary on such a good last day. Well, of course, they're flooding it with water, but still they're producing lots of oil up there. Mm-hmm. And it goes back through Johnson County and back through McGoffin, you know. Way on back through there.
What kind of an impact did the discovery of oil have in this area? Did it bring in a lot of people, or business?
Well, not too much business, I guess. Well, of course, it helped the bank here, Blaine, some. My great uncles, and my father was my great uncle's the first president of the Bank of Blaine. They established the bank here in 1903, mm-hmm. and 15,000 capital. It's small entity. And of course, the oil field then was opened up in the late teens and early 20s. And of course, that helped to boost the bank some and the business some in here. But of course, the oil laid the pipeline in here, you know, to take the oil out. And it made work for several of the younger generations coming on, you know, but not too much. Mm-hmm. Didn't too many strangers come in or anything like that, you see, but to operate the field.
You said you were born in 1898, is that correct? What day and month?
August 25th.
August 25th. How far
I'd
back?
Be about a month now, you see.
Good grief.
No young. Not so young anymore. What's that?